You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 170 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. I'm alive and well, despite being gone for a week plus, and I'm pretty exhausted and didn't see a ton of baseball, but it was a fun week to cover the Atlanta Braves. And joining me to talk about the week that was and much more is the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Hey, man, what's going on? I'm glad you got back home safe, and we're glad to have you back in the state of Georgia. it's been a really fun week to talk about for Braves fans, so I'm actually kind of looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff to be with the family and all that, and you know, good celebration of my grandfather, etc. But here we are, and we're gonna save the game stuff for the second segment of the podcast to give people what they want a little bit later. We'll talk about all of the wins that took place, which was a lot of fun over last week. But a couple of news items to hit on before we get to the actual baseball from this week. Let's start with the draft, which seems like it was a lifetime ago, but because you and I have not talked in this space, and because the Braves are now signing players and all the slot stuff's coming in, and I always say I have no idea what's going on with the draft. I just read you and Matt and everybody else. But I want to open the floor up to you to share anything that you would like about any of the picks and signings. I know you've talked about this stuff on Road to Atlanta, and people should be subscribing to this feed and listening to Road to Atlanta. But in case they missed it, where are you on the draft, and has anything changed since the night of the draft?
So I was really surprised. Oddly enough, I was on vacation, quote unquote vacation, when the draft was taking place. It was a little bit tough to kind of be as immersed as I normally was as a result. But I was kind of quarterbacking draft coverage for two different sites. Matt was kind of taking the lead on a lot of it. And I've had a lot of time to kind of percolate, I guess, on what this draft is and like what to think about it. I have no problems at all with the Braves taking Langoliers. I just kind of want to get that out there, is that it feels a little bit like they have kind of eschewed some upside in terms of that pick, but it's a guy who probably has major league ready defense and play calling behind the plate at catcher in a position that you just don't find those guys at. And there is, like, he could be a reasonably decent hitter. So I thought that was a good pick, and I was much happier when I found out that he was an underslot signing, so they could save some money to go after some day three picks, which is ultimately what this draft is going to be defined by for us, because Braden Shumake is a very sort of, you could tell, like, he is the guy that you would like if you put his numbers and his career into a computer. Kylie McDaniel actually mentioned this right after the draft, is that he's a college performer out of the SEC, and if an analytics-minded scouting department and front office is going to, that's the type of guy that's going to perform well in those types of, you know, those types of models. I was really surprised, though, that he signed at slot, and I was at that point, I was a little worried that they wouldn't have quite enough money to sign some of the day two guys that we liked, as well as a lot of the day three guys that we really liked. But so far, things have been going really well. The two guys on day two that we were really excited about were Michael Harris. He's a kind of a two-way guy. He's a pitcher as well as an outfielder. Sounds like that they're going to at least try him in the outfield first. You know, again, one of those super athletic, high upside prep guys. Wasn't quite good enough to get on that sort of that first round radar, but they popped him in the third round, and he's a guy that, you know, could be really good. And if, you know, working out as a hitter, it doesn't really work out, then he could always fall back on a pitching plan. And Stephen Paolini is probably the more interesting guy. He's their fifth round pick, I think. He was a little bit over slot for a fifth round pick, which isn't something we've seen the Braves do a lot. Usually starting like that fourth to fifth round range is when they start taking the seniors and trying to save a bunch of money with their slots, so that they can sign the other guys that are earlier in their draft or some of their day three guys. But they actually kind of spaced things out, and like a lot of their later, like their day two picks, they were not getting quite slot, but they were paying more than they usually do. But Paolini's an outfield prospect. He was like undercover. Doesn't look like the scouts were really in on him. And the Braves really do think that they feel like they got something special in that guy. Has a bunch of tools, really fast. Seems like he's hitting the ball hard, has some power. And again, not a guy that was on a lot of scouts' radar, but he's a guy, another prep guy who's – so the this kind of makes the rookie ball a little bit more interesting than I thought it was going to be with this draft, just because there's no international signings. And I didn't think that they were going to be going with many of the high school guys. There would be guys that were more college-ready, which is what they did with the first two picks. So once those two guys were in the fold, it made you feel like there was some really nice upside in the lower minors. And then with the day three picks that we were concerned that they may not have enough money for, they've at least gotten four of them. Vaughn Grissom, Tyler Owens, Caden Morton, and Bryce Ball were kind of the guys we were really looking at for those day three picks, and all four of those guys have signed. We're still waiting on Mekhi Backstrom, who's a first base prospect out of California, who was like on some short list for first round consideration when the year started, but he didn't play really well, and I think there were some vision problems that got corrected late. So we're hoping he signs, and Joey Essis is a prep arm, hasn't signed yet, and he's a guy that has some upside too. That those are the two signings, because ultimately it felt like a very safe draft at the top that they did, but that the real upside was more lottery ticket-esque in this draft, rather than going after some more highly regarded guys and going over a slot in the third round or something like that. They kind of spaced things out and bought a bunch of lottery tickets. So it's a very interesting draft. This isn't the strategy I probably would have done, but it is very interesting, and I want to see how it kind of unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton about these guys. Never going to be dived totally in, but that's, you know, what you said is kind of the takeaway that I had as someone who just checks and writes and reads and pays attention to the stuff as much as possible without having my own real analysis to it. It seemed like it surprised some folks, but at the same time, not a disaster. Like, there was some violent overreactions, as people might imagine, from the fan base. But it's and a lot of that's just like, oh, that isn't the guy that they were supposed to draft because of the mock draft that I read. It's like, it's the very natural things that happen with sports. But I was fine with it as someone who knows nothing, but and seemed like you were okay with it. So that's all I care about, really.
Yeah, it was fine. You know what I mean? Again, I personally am going to pick Corbin Carroll with that first pick because I really like him as a prep prospect. But a prep hitter is like a risky demographic in general. And when you have a college guy in Langoliers who's a position that you just don't find good catchers, and there was two in the top 10 this year, so it was fine. You know that there we if I did my first kind of first pass to the top 30 prospect lists because we're going to be updating that during the All-Star break. I have four guys from this draft in that top 30. And that's not bad. It's just not.
Yeah, I mean, especially in this system, which you cover at length, and we'll talk much more about that as we get there. Unless you have more on the draft, we can use the All-Star break reference to get into All-Star voting briefly. I don't care about All-Star voting. But professional segue here. But the Braves are, you know, as you might expect, prominently featured in the All-Star voting. At least the first returns were a couple of days ago now. But Ozzy Albies has the lead at second base. Ronald Acuna is the number three vote getter, but is starting player right now at outfield level. Brian McCann in the mix at catcher. Freddie Freeman is always underrated. He's third at first base. Dansby is second at shortstop, but he's like light years behind Javier Baez, so has no chance of actually winning. It's like a very distant second in terms of because the Cubs people vote in droves. Anything surprise you here or even worth discussing other than I wanted to at least mention it, but I don't really have takes on All-Star voting because I don't really care other than Freddie Freeman is always undervalued because he's just always undervalued.
Yeah, I was really surprised that Freddie was in third, and I think he has a reasonable shot of climbing that too, so I'm not rioting over that. He deserves to be an All-Star. He's been insane in the first half, and like we kind of forget when we're like looking at like Austin Riley and Acuna and what kind of the surge that Albies has put up and things like that. Like just how good Freddie's been the best hitter on the team by a mile, and that means something with this team right now because the offense is insane and it starts with him. He's perennially underrated. I was genuinely surprised that Brian McCann was in second place at catcher. Not because I have any issues with how he's been playing. He's been very decent, and you know he's managing that pitching staff really well. You know that Tyler Flowers Brian McCann platoon that we talked about before the season seems to be so far has been working out really well. But that a lot of that's name recognition and the fact.
I was about to say that's probably what it is, honestly, because that's what most of this stuff is. And McCann was an All-Star level player for so long that people just know who he is. And by the way, the Braves fans vote well usually. I mean, they're not quite the Cubs in terms of just the ridiculousness of the voting sometimes, but Braves fans usually do a pretty good job with this stuff.
Well, yeah, and I think that some of that's going to be ticking up too, because I mean, given how well the team's been doing, there's like more engaged casual fans and things like that, and the Braves are really pushing the All-Star voting stuff pretty well. I imagine that I think it's fair to say that Ozzie's probably the favorite at second base just because of that, and he's also playing well. Acuna is kind of the same thing. I think he's going to get one of those starting spots. McCann, there's no chance that Dansby is going to catch Baez. I don't know. I can't remember what the voting totals were, but Baez was way ahead.
It's like 900,000 to 2. So he's like four times the votes. It's not even going to be close, which is why I referenced it. It's the only reason why I even noticed it, because it was like, oh, that's not a gap that you see between one and two very often. Baez is good, but it's just one of those things.
Yeah, but Dansby's been performing very well, and like I would not be outraged if he got an All-Star spot. He's been playing really well. Donaldson at fourth was a little. I didn't think he was gonna be that far behind until I kind of looked at that group of third basemen, and that's a really tough a tough position to crack out All-Star spot at this year. So
yeah, I was not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, that, obviously the performance is there, but there's also that name recognition thing where I was kind of like, maybe people were just gonna vote for Donaldson because he's supposed to be there. But the third base is tough. I mean, Arenado leading the way there. There's a lot of really good players at third. So again, nothing super crazy. Just kind of some mild surprises for me.
Yeah, and we'll monitor that. I'm not a huge All-Star guy. In fact, if there's a single Sunday in which I might skip the podcast due to travel, et cetera, it'll probably be All-Star weekend or All-Star week, because I just don't care about the All-Star game. But here we are, and the Braves will have people in it. That's my objective analysis, Eric, is that people will be there representing Atlanta Braves, probably including your boy Mike Soroka, just by the way.
It seems very likely. He'd have to really fall off the cliff here to not get a spot. So he's been performing really well.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that as we get closer. Last thing before we get to the actual baseball on the field, there were some transactions this week. The biggest one was Kevin Gausman going to the IL in favor of AJ Minter. And that, of course, paves the way for Dallas Keuchel to some extent. He's not quite there yet, but you saw Dallas Keuchel in person, so I'm going to defer to you on that part of this thing. But hold that off for a second. Anything surprise you? I mean, Minter was the guy we all suspected to be coming back pretty soon. He was pitching well in the minors. And Gausman, you know, how hurt he is up for debate, I suppose. But he was, with the way he was pitching, he was never going to stick around. There was going to be something happening, whether it be a bullpen assignment or an IL stint. An IL stint probably was the move based on how bad he had been in the recent past. The numbers we talked about last week on the podcast, but the numbers were just jarringly bad over a 3 or 4 start sample. So, you know, the Phantom DL stint was probably the way, sorry, IL stint is probably the way to move there. And Minter is back and looks okay to me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Minter looked good, especially not today, the big win, but the night before. He was really good in that inning. I mean, he was like, other than Luke Jackson kind of messing things up, the bullpen actually performed really well, and it kind of looked like the Minter that we had kind of gotten used to seeing, you know, like has real life and he's throwing strikes. And I like where he is as in terms of the reliever. I'm a little bit surprised that it seems like a very specific injury to do a phantom IL stint, like plantar fasciitis, I think is what it was. So I do wonder if maybe Gausman's been dealing with something, you know, over the course of the year and things like that. But I don't see – it's hard for me to envision a world where he'll make another start. I mean, I could see him in the bullpen because there's that two-pitch mix might work.
Yeah, his stuff might play up. I mean, yeah, I think he might start, but he's going to need an injury, maybe two, I would imagine, to actually get – because, I mean, with the way that Newcomb – and we'll talk about Newcomb later – the way that they seemed okay slotting him in there for at least the one, maybe two starts. They have the young guys too. They're still available. You know, maybe if you get a long-term injury, you might slot Gausman back in there just because of the safety. You might give him a chance again. And the way that he's being paid, he's going to be paid handsomely and he has the track record, but you know, over under 0.5 starts, you're taking the under for the rest of the season.
I would say he might make one or two because they have a couple guys in Fried and Soroka that I think they're going to be managing the innings.
Yeah, that's the reason I would take the over on 0.5. Like, I'm not saying he's going to make 10 starts, but I think, you know, even if it gets to like September, you might just, he's around. And, you know, unless he's just actively injured and unavailable, he's someone who can fill some innings for you. And especially with the way Fried has been not pitching all that well, maybe you see a shutdown on Fried or a skip on Fried at some point, you know, that kind of stuff, just to see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves could have a pretty interesting sort of roster construction thing where they have Gausman and Newcomb in the pen, where they can like do a bullpen game, but like they could just run two guys out there for most of it. You know what I mean? Like they could manage innings that way. They can give guys extra days of rest where, you know, guys like Tehran who have pitched well under those circumstances, for example. It's interesting because again, there's no one in the bullpen that makes me like go, I would be upset if Gausman and Newcomb were in there and they like X guy or Y guy. There's only a few guys in that bullpen that I'm like, they deserve to be in there no matter what over those two guys. So I'm hopeful, but that, you know, Gausman can actually turn into some value. But I mean, he was just so bad. He had no command. His fastball was flat and the splitter, you know, at times looked really good, but he was super inconsistent. And when you only have two pitches, which is basically what he has the fastball and he has the splitter. That's it. And it feels like that going to the bullpen is the logical step there. But I think for the moment, they're going to put him on the injured list for as long as they can until they can kind of sort things out roster wise.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have an? I'm not even sure how to say his name, to be honest with you, because I've not been watching a lot of baseball.
Enoa?
Yes, Enoa. That's what I was going to guess. So thank you for that. Do you have takes on him? He threw two innings today, right, in mop up duty and was okay.
Yeah, he looked good. I've thought for probably the last year or so that he was a relief prospect, just because the fastball is live. It's a high 90s fastball, and the breaker is pretty good. It's pretty inconsistent, but that's a really good profile for a reliever. He's been a starter for most of his time in the minor leagues. It's kind of, he's had some relief appearances here and there more recently just to kind of prepare him for either role. But when you add a guy like him to the 40-man roster, which is what they did to kind of protect him from the Rule 5 draft, I was a little surprised he was the one that got called up, because Patrick Weigel is just sitting down there at AAA and he's on the 40-man roster too. Yeah. But Enoa was like scheduled to start on Saturday and they needed the guy for that date, so it makes sense to have him kind of up and ready to go. And he looked good. I mean, it's live stuff. I don't know how good of a reliever he could be, but the stuff is really good, and it could be. And he's definitely more interesting than some of the arms they've been running out there and hoping. You know, so yes. I was a little bit surprised, but at the same time, I was all for it, because again, this isn't like a 40-man move that would have really been puzzling for me. He was already on the 40-man, and if that's the case, pulling him up to see what you got in him, even though he hasn't been pitching particularly well this year down in the minors. I guess he's kind of working on some stuff here and there, but he looked good today, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I imagine this will be a short stint in the major leagues, but I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, saw action again here relatively soon.
Yeah, they need all the help they can get at the end of games, and obviously he's a potential multi-inning guy, etc. So we'll talk about him if needed. But I want to at least make note of the fact that he appeared and has been on the roster. So there you go. All right, Eric, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the awesome week that was for the Atlanta Braves. All right, Eric, we're back, and a fun one, as we alluded to early in the podcast, for the Braves. They came within a Luke Jackson blown save on Saturday of a spotless week, and even with that in mind, they have now won 9 out of 10 games, and as we sit here right now, they have, what, a 2.5-game lead on the Nationals. They have a
538...
Sorry, over the Nationals. Over the Phillies. I'm used to the Nationals being the thing.
Yeah, and they're not this year.
They're not. There were some flashes from the Nationals where I actually thought they might get back in, and they might. I mean, they're not like dead, but it's, that was a 40 and slip. But yeah, over the Phillies, 90-72 projected record on 538. They also project a 73% chance to make the playoffs and a 55% chance to win the National League East after what was an awesome week of baseball. So we'll go through a little bit of it. Obviously, the sweep over Pittsburgh was nice. Probably less impactful than even taking 2 out of 3 from the Phillies. But where do you want to start? We'll just start at the beginning, I guess. Monday was interesting. Yeah, the first inning fireworks, let's say, with Josh Donaldson getting ejected. It feels like a long time ago now that he was ejected and suspended and Musgrove and all that stuff, and that was a weird game, one that also included a Ronald Acuna grand slam. Ozzie had 2 home runs, and Ozzie's been great, and then Newcomb, what are you, 4 2/3 innings of spotless relief. It was a weird baseball game on Monday in a lot of ways.
I was a little surprised that they handed Donaldson a suspension, if I'm being honest about it.
That was weird to me, too. I totally agree. Like, I didn't have an overwhelming take, but it was like, wait, that got him suspended? Like, ejection? Okay, that's fine. But he got ejected in the first inning of a game. Like, he just missed the game.
Yeah, he did kind of, like, push the catcher out of the way, but it wasn't like, I mean, like, there weren't, like, punches thrown. It wasn't a big melee or anything like that. It seemed like most people involved were just trying to keep the guys separated. They're two very hot-headed guys. Musgrove wasn't going to have anyone tell him what he could or couldn't do, and Donaldson took issue, I guess, with how Musgrove was looking at him, and, you know, words were exchanged, and, you know, he, again, Donaldson did kind of move Elias Diaz, I think, was the catcher that game, moved him out of the way, and Musgrove like kind of threw his hat and glove on the ground like he was ready to fight. So I mean, I kind of understand the ejections, maybe, but like the suspensions felt really weird to me. So
I totally agree. It was very. And by the way, there were like players taking to social media that were like, "What is going on here?" Like the Musgrove suspension. I mean, the Musgrove ejection. I was like, "What are we?" I'm not the go in and tell everybody that like the wussification of America stuff. I'm not that guy, but like I couldn't figure out why Donaldson was suspended. Ejections, like, I would have erred on not even ejecting them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but, like if anyone was going to get ejected, it was going to be Donaldson. I don't even know if I would have ejected Musgrove.
That's now, what I'm saying. Hurdle
getting ejected, that makes a total amount of sense because he was mad because Musgrove got ejected that, you know, that was going to happen.
He went full angry manager mode, which is that's justified, I suppose, in that instance. You just got to – that's one of those things that managers just do. They blow their top either on purpose or naturally, just kind of go all in and know they're going to get ejected. That's fine. You get your players' backs and all that. But, yeah, that kind of overshadowed what was a fun game. Like, everybody hit in that game between Acuna's grand slam. Ozzie hit two home runs. Camargo got healthy, which was nice, with three hits. Marquegas had four hits, too, to break out of his slump that he had been having for a while. Yeah, just a good win to start the week off, and obviously building on the sweep over the weekend, taking the fourth in a row. You know, the rest of the week was the rest of that series, I should say, was also quite kind. Monday was probably the most memorable game because of what happened with the fireworks on the field. But Tuesday was an 8-inning game, which you don't often see because the always fun 9th-inning rain delay. I was laughing. I was not watching because I was
– Oh, the beat writers were so upset.
Yeah, I was going to say the beat writers were not happy. And trust me, I mean, I had not been there in a baseball sense, but any delay when you're trying to work, any delay like in the fourth quarter of a basketball game or a football game, like an official review, I understand. It's not a fun thing to sit through, which is, of course, a first-world problem if you are a professional sports writer. But I sort of identify with them on that one, but they ended up calling it, which was even funnier. Like, they had to hang around for a long time and then not having to do anything.
There was no forecast that they could have looked at and said, maybe we could fit this last inning in. I mean, like, every forecast is it's going to be a torrential downpour for the next 5 hours, and they took for a long time to decide to call that game. And I was just like, okay, just have everyone hang around for no reason. That's fine, but...
Yeah, I mean, the Braves hit five homers in the game and won, again, of course. Fulte struggled, but aside from that, there wasn't too much to be upset about. Brian McCann had a huge week, and that was part of it, with two home runs in one game. And of course, his biggest contribution and the most famous one was over the weekend. But Tuesday was a quiet Brian McCann game with two home runs, if you can say that out loud.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call it quiet, but you know, at the very
compared
least,
to what happened later in the week, I should say, just because of the attention it got. But yeah, good, a fun game. Wednesday was the most high drama probably of the Pittsburgh series,
and I was covering that one.
Yeah, you were there. That's right. I forgot you guys were there. That's good.
Yeah.
Austin Riley ties it in the 9th with a solo home run because he's been ridiculous still. And then Ozzie walks it off in the 11th. Other than every starter having a hit, which was obviously pretty good with the offense. We'll talk about the offense in a second with Pittsburgh and that Pittsburgh series because it was ridiculous. Did you jinx Mike Soroka being there? Now that you say that you were there, and I mean, he wasn't good. That was the first time he's ever been bad, basically.
I guess I might have jinxed him a little bit, but I've also been in some Soroka starts that have been. He's also been pretty good. That Pittsburgh lineup is. Everyone was talking about they only had like two guys that were any good. That is just not true. That lineup's actually pretty scary. And they had a pretty good approach. They just didn't try to hit for much power against him. You know, they hit a lot of ground balls that found holes and stuff. You know, I mean, there's some guys that can hit the ball pretty hard too, which helps. You know, hard grounders play up a little bit more than the soft ones, and you know, some ground balls found holes, some flares kind of, you know, were landed just fair and things like that. But also Mike wasn't particularly good either. He wasn't locating and keeping the ball down the way he normally does, and there wasn't the same movement on his pitches. So maybe I guess I kind of jinxed him, but at the same time, like during that Pittsburgh series, it's not like our pitching staff was like putting up ones and zeros. You know what I mean? In those games, Pittsburgh's offense came to play, and it just so happened that they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Braves offense right now and just got swept in four games, which shouldn't have happened and, frankly, is surprising that it happened considering how many runs they gave up. But, again, that just kind of tells you how the offense is playing.
Yeah, I mean, we could fast forward. Yeah, Thursday's game was kind of you know, it was a good win for the Braves. Obviously, it wasn't like a hugely memorable one, but a win to complete the sweep. But, you know, going to the offense on the whole there, because you mentioned the pitching staff wasn't great in that series, and they weren't. And normally you would not expect to get a four-game sweep victory over a team that's not terrible without pitching decently well. They really didn't pitch that well because the offense was ridiculous. As a team in the Pittsburgh series, I tweeted this out, but I'll say it again now, a 172 WRC plus as a team for a four-game series. This is the slash line for the team. 327, 418, 639 with 11 home runs in four games as a team.
Yeah, you gotta love the over 1,000 OPS as a team.
Yeah, I mean, like 1050. Yeah, Ozzie slugged 1188 in the series. Slugged, not OPS. Slugged 1188 in the series. Marquez had a great series. He had a 526 on base percentage. Dansby had a 600 on base percentage. The list goes on and on. And it's worth noting, obviously, the offense was really good again against Philly. And I don't have the numbers in front of me because the Fangraphs hasn't updated yet from Sunday's game. So I didn't want to calculate stuff on all by hand. It would have taken me forever. But the offense was just ridiculous all week, and it was easy to capture the Pittsburgh stuff. But you know, even beyond that, of course, as we'll get to in a second, they scored 29 runs in three games against Philly.
Yeah, that's
in addition
pretty good.
So the whole week of offense was just outrageous. And you know, I know they maybe got a little bit fortunate to win 9 of 10, just because you know of how many one-run games there were, and there were some comeback victories, including the one that we're about to talk about. But you know, the offense was elite. For the last 10 games. That's the only way to put that. There's no other way around it. The pitching staff should be buying the offense meals, I suppose, over the last week or so.
Yeah, it was just kind of wild because especially the next one game we were talking about. It just like with this team, you just never feel like that there's zero chance that they're going to win a game.
And that's Friday. I mean, let's talk about Friday now, because Friday was the eighth straight win, and they had no business winning that game. I mean, it's a fun one, as you're talking about, and it's always the last at bat stuff, the heroics, the fireworks that happen with this team, but they're just never out of it. And that game, candidly, I was not watching because I had a family thing. I kind of wrote it off in my brain. Like, I was looking at the box score. I'm like, all right, it's 7-2 in the seventh. It's probably over. And then it wasn't, not by a long shot.
No, I mean, they kind of stopped the bleeding towards the end of the game. And I'm not like a big fan of the whole clutch stuff, because I think that good hitters just do good things generally. But it seems like every time that Austin Riley needs to come up with a big hit, he just does it. And, you know, he had the RBI double that, honestly, if he had squared up just a little bit better, would have ended the game right there in the ninth. You know, Culberson coming in with a triple as he continues his improbable run as basically Babe Ruth coming off the bench. And then, you know, McCann hits the walk-off, and all of a sudden it's a win that for a game that they had no business winning. You know, it kind of evened out the next day, but this team's just really fun to watch. They can just have big innings out of nowhere. They can get you'll see innings 1 through 3 where a starter feels like they had a good game plan for the Braves hitters, and it's like, okay, well, we're not going to score that many runs this day. And then the next time through the order, like five guys just make an adjustment, and all of a sudden they just put up five runs, and they're like, okay, good luck catching us. And that's just they do it over and over again.
No, I mean, the offense has been great. It really, I mean, it's been ridiculous. And, you know, the Brian McCann interview with Kelsey and, you know, his fist pump, and he was getting there. I mean, Gwinnett County's own Brian McCann. I have a long history with Brian McCann. I love Brian McCann, having grown up. I didn't play against him, but I watched him play in high school. He grew up, I don't know, 5 miles from me. And you know, him and Jeff Francoeur, who I know personally, et cetera, et cetera. Brian McCann is a personal favorite, obviously. And to have him do that, and just the reaction to that, you know, the Twitter video from Fox Sports, like, moved in a way that Braves, like, regular season videos don't move. Like, that thing made the rounds because everyone loves Brian McCann. So right. Just having him do that in that spot against the Phillies on a Friday night when everybody's watching the 5-run comeback.
To get his 1,000th RBI, too.
Yeah, like, I mean, every box you want to check was checked by that game. That was awesome. I wish I could have watched the entire thing during, sort of unfold in front of my eyes. But, it was awesome. And by the way, I have this note that I forgot to share earlier about the pitching staff. The team, you know, they won 8 in a row. The last 6 games of the winning streak, the team ERA was 4.97. How many 6-game winning streaks do you have with a team ERA of 4.97?
I would imagine not very many, although I'm sure that someone who feels
I'm sure it happens.
Well, but
especially in the American League.
Yeah,
especially, I mean, in the American League, I'm sure it happens more, but like just the percentage, like the way that the odds would shake out there, if you just, you know, did a bunch of random simulations, how often would a team win six games in a row against not terrible competition by any means with Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and I guess Miami's pretty bad, but you know, it's, that was only one game of the Miami series, I suppose. You know, it's just crazy, man. The last six games of that winning streak just kind of keep mashing offensively, and then it kind of all peaked on Friday. So that was a fun one. We won't spend too much time on Saturday because, you know, they blew the save. Luke Jackson, you know, it was not not one where he was like just battered and bruised as a pitcher necessarily. It wasn't like he was giving up home run after home run to blow the save. And I'll let you talk about that in a second. We'll get to that in a second. But the Sean Newcomb injury was probably the biggest thing that happened on Saturday other than just the loss, just because he got hit in the head with a liner, and that was a scary moment. A concussion protocol stint for Newcomb. Apparently he's going to be okay by all indications. Unless I missed something today on my long drive back, I think he's going to be avoiding the DL. Is that what, I'm sorry, the IL. Is that what we are led to believe now?
Yeah, it doesn't even seem like he's going to miss a start. You know, the word this morning out of Dave O'Brien was that, you know, he's got a bump on his head, but no issues going to slept through the night without any issues. No, you know, no issues with the concussion protocol. And you know, he's got a bump in his neck, a little bit sore, because, again, you got hit by a 102-mile-an-hour line drive off your head. That's going to do it. But he looks like he's going to be okay, which that was the scariest thing. And honestly, losing a game like that doesn't really concern me all that much, because you lose your starter in the third inning, you know, and a confluence of events had to happen for you to lose that game, and you were still in a position in the ninth inning to win it. It wouldn't have surprised me if, like, that game got away from them just because of, you know, it kind of threw everything in flux.
Yeah, but it did. I mean, to their credit, they were actually, you know, in a position to win, and we could be talking about a 10 game winning streak pretty easily right now. They very easily could have won that baseball game,
because ultimately it was a guy on first. They were trying to lay down a sack bunt. Luke Jackson went to field it, and instead of one out and a runner on second, they had no outs on runners on second and third. That's how they lost.
And then the sort of, I guess, the eventual game-winning single was not like it was drilled. I mean, it was hit through the left side of the infield, like it was kind of just placed very well. I think it's like the third time Jackson has been victimized by like some weird ground ball luck. And of course, he was self-imposed this time.
But kind.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's been, even when he's blown saves, quote unquote, he's not been really bludgeoned in a way that you would envision a blown save. So,
I still refuse to believe that, like, Luke Jackson's this all-star closer or anything like that. He's not the problem either. You know what I mean?
No, so it was not a disastrous outing from a closer that you were envisioning. If you just saw the box score and saw a blown save Luke Jackson and they blew it to lead the ninth inning, you would be more frustrated than if you actually watched what happened.
It was an errant throw on a guy who doesn't field a lot of ground balls. That's going to happen sometimes. And considering the events of the game, of what happened, this game could have gotten a lot worse. And, you know, some of that luck's going to even out. You know, the Braves had gotten really lucky to win some of the games that they have. And some of that you make your own luck. But, you know, there's also going to be things that happen that, you know, are just, that's just how baseball works. So you're not going to win 162 games. You're just going to have games like that where just a little mistake all of a sudden costs you. And that's not something I get too riled up about.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry, especially when Sunday happened, and this one I missed entirely. But it was a fun one. I was in the car, so I was at least able to, I guess, watch the festivities on my phone unfolding. But a season high in runs, season high in hits, Josh Donaldson things happened. People that were all always critical of him. Well, can't say much today. But just a bludgeoning 15-1 against your, I guess for this year's purposes, your arch rival. You know. To get to 12 games over 500 for the first time all season, like you can't be too upset with the way that things went today. It was a very fun game at the ballpark.
Donaldson had a really good series against Philadelphia just in general. It wasn't just that game. He was just really good the whole series. But like, it's insane that Ronald Acuna went 4-for-5 with a home run and three singles and like scored a bunch of runs.
And no one cared.
And it's debatable as to whether or not he had the best offensive game.
Yeah, it was like very quiet. I mean, I looked at the box score in prep for this. I was like, all right, who do we want to talk about? I guess Donaldson's the obvious one, but like there was a lot of things happening offensively in this game and really the entire week.
I tweeted this out. It was either yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. I said, it's weird that Acuna's hit safely in like 14 to 15 games. And people are still wondering when he's actually going to hit his stride. And he's had some really good at bats lately, and he's hitting the ball like even with more authority than usual, and his bats have appeared a little bit better. It's kind of scary to think that there's actually a world where this team could actually be performing well better, performing better if like Acuña is like the Acuña that we've seen him on streaks before, where he literally just carries your team.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, how many guys, you could make the argument that, you know, most guys are hitting at their norms or better, and even, but to your point about Acuña, you know, right now, today, we can say he's not had a, like, incredible Acuña season so far, and he has a slash of 296, 375, 507 with a 129 at WRC+. He's 21 years old, so.
Yeah, and you could easily see a world where he'd be better than that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like he's not like having a season that we're talking about every week, because he's not been as good as he was last year so far.
But to say that,
he's 21 years old and this is like a quote down year or something even close to that is pretty outrageous. Like he's ridiculous, man.
He does. Every time he's on the base path too, it seems like he always finds a way to come around and score, because if he draws a walk or if he only hits a single, everyone's like, oh, where are the power numbers? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. He's going to like, he's one of the hardest guys in the world to, you know, get force outs out at second. You know what I mean? And he'll steal a base. He'll take extra bases on ground balls and fly balls. And he will come around one way or the other. So, and he hasn't been the best, like this week, he was like maybe the third or fourth best hitter on the Braves.
I wanted to mention Ozzy. I said this, some of the numbers earlier from the Pittsburgh series, but Ozzy was just ridiculous this week. And now, you know, after all of the consternation about Ozzy struggling with his supreme hot streak over the last week or so, he's up to a 107 WRC+. And if you combine that with his defense, he's now like a, you know, on pace for like a 3.5 win season.
Yeah.
Despite struggling.
I looked at the lineup earlier. Of all the Braves regulars, the Braves have one hitter with less than an 800 OPS, and it's Nick Markakis, and he's like right there.
Yeah, and honestly, like with Ender not in the lineup anymore because of Riley, like there's not really a weakness. I mean, the catcher spot's not this like overall mystery, but when compared to other catchers, like
it's totally fine.
Sign me up for Flowers and McCann. Like that's a top 10 duo in the league.
I would not be surprised if they extend McCann for, especially if he continues this throughout the year. I would not be surprised if they extend McCann for another year, because they have Langoliers and Contreras coming. But those two guys, they don't look washed up. They don't look like they're like desperately trying to hang on to a roster spot. They've been playing really well. And if Nick Markakis is your worst hitter, you are doing just fine. Because,
well, that's what I mean. I mean, there's just no weaknesses right now. I mean, Markakis had a really rough stretch before the beginning of this week, had a good series against Pittsburgh, then cooled off a little bit after that. But yeah, if he's your worst hitter or even one of your worst two hitters, you're in great shape. Like, you know, he's not a bad hitter. Like Markakis, for all the gruff we've given him over the years, has never been a bad hitter. Like he had a bad few months last year, and he was not an overwhelming force, obviously. But like he gets on base at the very least, he gets on base. And if he's your worst hitter, you're in fantastic shape. And with Riley now in there, you have guys who have, you know, the obvious star power guys in Freeman, Acuña, and then you have the guys who have real upside. There's just nothing to have pitchers capitalize on other than the pitcher spot, which everyone has the opportunity to do in the National League. So you just don't see
National League lineups where you're looking at you're like the opposing pitcher and you look at the 6, 7, 8 hitters and it's Austin Riley, Brian McCann, and Ozzy Albies.
Yeah, I mean the question coming into the year was, what is Dansby Swanson going to be, and what is Ender Inciarte going to be? And now Ender's not in the lineup; it hasn't been for a month, and Dansby's been hitting very well for most of the season. So it's like if you can check off that box, like he was coming into the year, Dansby was the spot where you would say, other than Ender, that you would say like maybe this doesn't go great offensively. But he's been good, and that makes them so much better too. Because if you combine that with Riley taking over for Ender and just hitting the crap out of the baseball for now a month plus, like there's no weaknesses. It's not like the 27 Yankees. It's not the best lineup in the league, but it's a top five lineup in the league if they're hitting like this. Like for the last 10 games or whatever this is now, they're just lighting the world on fire. And, you know, the pitching staff is a problem, and I don't want to focus on it too much today because we're going to have this be a positive podcast after 9 wins out of 10 games, but they needed this, honestly. They had hit well to play well the last week or so, and they did it because they have the talent to do it.
Yeah, before we, move off the pitching stuff, I do want to kind of talk a little bit about Keuchel because, again, I got to see him live.
Yeah, let's do that since you were there. Sorry,
so you're fine. We things go off the rails with you and I.
We're totally zooming fine. Around, you and me, and I'm tired.
So I did go to Keuchel's start in Rome. He did look good in the sense that like these low A hitters just literally had no chance doing anything against him, which is kind of what you would expect from a guy who was supposed to be on a short timetable on this minor league assignment that he's on. I will say that he was missing the zone low a lot, but I think that had more to do with the fact that he could just pitch the ball wherever he wanted to. And if he threw the ball where he was, these guys would be flailing at it. You know, the slider looked pretty good, and the fastball was, you know, it's kind of what it is. He's kind of a junk ball guy, but he has this really good command, which helps a lot. And, you know, between that and the cutter, he was throwing like high 80s, low 90s. That's just kind of what he is. Looked good. But the numbers he put up were really good. I will say I didn't get a chance to watch his Mississippi start, and the numbers looked a little concerning just because of the number of hits he gave up. The word coming from like, you know, the Mississippi Braves side was, you know, there was a lot of little dinky hits and things like that. But I did hear from one scout from another team that said that he didn't think he looked very good and that the breaking ball wasn't very good. So I will say this about Keuchel is that while there's that name recognition, he's a former Cy Young Award winner. I hope that folks are tempering their expectations and that you're not getting the Keuchel that won the Cy Young. You're getting a guy who should be able to give you reliable innings and, you know, not let games go away from you like they would when Gausman was in there, or, you know, some of the other guys that have kind of been run out there at times to try to get starts, Newcomb earlier in the year, et cetera, et cetera. But he's a guy that because his stuff, he doesn't have like a hammer curve or a wipeout slider, and he doesn't have like a mid to high 90s fastball he can blow anyone away with. His command has to be perfect, and he has to get action on his pitches so that they each play off each other. And he is not the same guy he once was. So I hope that people aren't assuming that he's going to be an ace, because I think he'll be okay, but I don't think he's going to be like this like savior of the pitching staff either, where like, you know, all of a sudden you have this like guy that you can run out there in game one of a playoff series, because I don't think he's that guy anymore.
Yeah, it's good context, and I think it pretty much echoes what Scott and I were saying when they signed him. And you know, he looked great, obviously, the first minor league start, and he was always going to probably. But you know, realistically, you're signing him for stability and having this very solid veteran in the middle of the rotation. He's not gonna go out and dominate for you. Like maybe he can have a run like that. Obviously, he's a Cy Young winner and all that stuff. But you have to understand that he is not that. Like, I think I made the comparison to they did not acquire Justin Verlander. That's not the kind of guy they're doing.
Verlander still had, you know, a fastball.
That's what I mean. Like, you're not going to get, like, you know, Keuchel can look like that sometimes, but he just doesn't have the stuff of that traditional ace pitcher. And listen, he profiles as one of the best three pitchers on the roster when he's healthy and ready to go. So it's definitely going to help, because he's going to be solid, I think. And the upgrade there from what you got from Gausman is very solid. And by the way, at some point in the future, when we're not trying to be positive, we might talk about Max Fried and what's happening there, because it's kind of quietly not been great. And then Fulte had some moments today, but I think he walked five. Didn't matter in a 15-1 game, but he's even in his best start in a while, he was not great either. So, yeah, there's some weaknesses on the starting pitching staff.
Yeah, it's not a perfect roster. They've had some good things going for them. I just kind of hope they give like guys like Fried a break. And I still am. I'll just keep saying this until I have a reason to believe that. I just don't know if Folty is either completely confident in the health of his arm or that he is completely healthy. Just because it just the stuff just looks very different. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, this is not 2018 Folty right now. It's just not.
No.
And that's the reality of the situation.
For the first inning, he was today, and then after that, it kind of went off the rails again.
Yeah,
I
he's
mean,
flashed
I
it a
say,
couple
I say,
times now. I mean, he's had a couple of innings where you're like, oh, okay, he might be back, and then he's not back.
Yeah, I say off the rails, like, you know, he only gave up one run, but I mean, like, it's just the command is just kind of
the five walks is jarring.
Yeah.
Anyway, without going too deep into that rabbit hole, I'm glad you mentioned Keuchel. That's interesting, and we'll see when do you think he's going to come back? When do you think he's coming? That's a question that we got a lot this week. Then I saw in the mentions, when is Keuchel going to pitch? And I don't know.
So when we talked to Keuchel after the game in Rome, the plan was for him to pitch somewhere today or this weekend, which he did. And
Right.
then the hope is that he would be able to start, I think Friday, I think is the general plan, to kind of the next place where Newcomb's, you know, the Gausman Newcomb spot is when he would pitch, unless they felt like that he needed one more start in the minors. And that was something they were going to decide like at the beginning of this, you know, probably tomorrow.
That's basically what I read too. Is like, all right, well, they'll decide Monday or Tuesday, and then if he pitches, it's going to be like Friday. Just for the record, on the schedule this week, as we wrap up in a second, they have the Mets at home for three. They're off on Thursday, and then the Nationals on the road over the weekend. And right now, there is a glaring empty spot in the probable pitcher spot on Friday against Anibal Sanchez in Washington. So that might be a spot.
two junk ball extraordinaires going at each other.
Yeah, that'll be fun if it happens. But yeah, a couple of obviously, you know, division rivals on the slate this week. The attention's paid to Philly right now, but you know, New York and Washington have talent. They're not incapable of stinging the Braves this week if something goes wrong. Just for the standings check, the Mets and the Nationals are still like not dead. I mean, the Mets are 7.5 back. The Nats are 8.5 back. You know, obviously they are not the concern when compared to the Phillies right now, but they're not dead teams like the Marlins are. So it's worth pointing that out when you're facing your rivals.
Well, and the Braves have Zach Wheeler and Jacob DeGrom to deal with. So they'll be interesting to see how this offense, the way it's playing, goes against those two guys who have been pitching well. I think that the Braves are missing the majority of, like, I don't think they get Strasburg and Scherzer in the next series unless I'm misremembering.
No, in fact, unless this is wrong, they only have to face Corbin, and they miss both Scherzer and Strasburg, which is a huge win if that's true, because that's what you want. You don't want to face those guys. Corbin is good, by the way, so it's not like it's a break or anything, but missing those two big right-handers is helpful.
Definitely.
All right, Eric. Well, aside from the looming Los Angeles Dodgers, who are ridiculous, the Braves look to be pretty darn good right now, and they're in great shape, much better shape than they were in a few weeks ago. If this continues, I will be wrong in how I thought about them early in the season. I projected them for like a high, you know, mid to high 80s win total, and right now they're projected to basically be a 90-win team or so. And so they're outperforming that, and you know, the offense is the biggest reason why. But any final thoughts before we get out of here? We've covered a lot of ground today, I think.
I will say that if you watch games around the league and if you've watched the Braves opponents over the last couple weeks, you will take a great amount of appreciation for, even though there's some mistakes that happen defensively, how much value that defense gives to this ball club in that, you know, coming up with big catches or just making big plays, because there's some really bad defense being played around the league. And Philadelphia running out a roster that seems to have a bunch of guys out of position or should be playing first base only. It's something that certainly didn't help them in this series. And I think that's kind of, and I will maintain that it's going to be one of those things that's going to ultimately cost them the division. It's why I predicted the Braves to win the division. It's that I just think that overall, the Braves team has some warts. There's no question about that. But overall, top to bottom, they just play in at least two facets of the game. They play a complete game. They can do a lot of things well in those areas. And I genuinely thought at the beginning of the season, and I still think it now, that they're real favorites to win the division, and I have no reason to believe otherwise.
There you go. I'm not as clear in my pick of the Braves to win the division as you are, but right now today I would pick the Braves to win the division. That's probably the first time that I've said that full on definitively. I think the Braves are going to win the division. It would not blow me away if they didn't, because you know the Phillies are still right there and they do have weaknesses as well, but I think the Braves at this moment are the team to beat in the National League East.
That's a lot of optimism. I remember the last month of the season last year when we were talking on the podcast and you were like, you know, these last couple of series against Philadelphia are going to really tell us, you know, whether or not who's going to decide this division. I mean, I was open and honest. I said, I think this thing's done and they're going to clinch that second to last series against Philadelphia. It's kind of what happened, just because, like, I just don't think that Philadelphia team, they had so many moving parts. They're trying to figure out things out in terms of lineup and in terms of their pitching staff and their bullpen. I just don't see it. I think they're going to have some stretches where, like, four or five games where, like, you know, they're like a offense with Harper and Real Muto and Segura is just going to have a good stretch here and there. I just don't think that they can keep it up. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more like a 60-40 for me, with the Braves at 60 and like some combination of Phillies. I think the Nationals are not dead. I would not put them as very high percentage chance to win the division, but they're not dead. The Mets, I'm worried about a little bit less. But, you know, yeah, I'll say this. The Braves are the favorites, and they should be treated as such right now. And that is a credit to the way that they've played. And, of course, some of that's to the struggles of the Mets and the Nationals. But still, the Braves have been playing really well, and they should be acknowledged as such. All right, man. Well, we'll talk more in a week or so on this podcast, barring emergency. I'm trying to think. Somebody asked me this question this week. we could end on this. Like, what would be the move that would inspire an emergency podcast right now? Like, it'd have to be a trade of some sort. Once Keuchel and Kimbrel sign, it's like, all right, what's the emergency podcast going to be? And it's like, all right, well, there probably won't be one unless there's some major trade.
It would have to be a trade. I imagine like a team like the Giants or the Mariners would have to be involved because they have some of those high profile names. I don't think the Braves are going to get Madison Bumgarner. It sounded earlier today like the Twins have made some real headway in towards making that happen. And Bumgarner, I understand the name recognition, but it's kind of the same thing with Keuchel. You're not getting the guy that was pitching on like 3 days rest, you know, winning the World Series almost single handedly. It's, you know, you're getting kind of the not great version of him. But I could see maybe some like one of the Giants relievers, but even then is that emergency podcast of it real? Like, you know, that they get like an eighth inning guy, you know what I mean? Like,
I would say like Will Smith is not emergency podcast worthy. I don't think. Maybe if it happened on like Monday, we wouldn't wait till Sunday to record, but like, I'm not breaking into my schedule to record about Will Smith. We're just not going to do that.
Unless it was something crazy where like they gave up like two of their top five prospects to get one.
Sure. If it was like some awful trade, then sign me up for that. Cause I'd probably hear from you first if it was a prospect driven trade, because then you'd be upset and you'd be ready to fire off some takes. But yeah, I mean, in short, I would be surprised if there are too many emergency podcasts between now and the trade deadline, but we'll see.
We'll see what happens.
So I wanted to answer that question.
Yep. So short answer, probably nothing. I think they might. I have a hunch they'll make a trade or two for, you know, some relief arms or something like that. But in terms of like emergency podcast stuff, it would require something that would be something that I'm not seeing coming. So.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Well, that's probably good for today, Eric. And we will be back. We're back on a regular schedule, hopefully. I think we've been on the schedule for this podcast. I've been all over the place, but Sundays have been weirdly clear, at least clear enough to record content. So hopefully that makes everybody happy, and we'll be back again 1 week from now. Please plug yourself though, Eric, as always, and the Road to Atlanta show and everything else that you have going on.
Sure. On the same channel that you're subscribed to, Talking Chopper, you might be noticing this podcast that keeps popping up called The Road to Atlanta. That's our minor league podcast where we kind of do each week every Thursday, where we talk about the minor leagues. It was very draft heavy before the draft, obviously. We did our kind of our Braves minor league all-star teams this past week, and we're trying to figure out exactly what content we're going to be doing going forward, because right now it'd be really easy to talk for an hour about Christian Pache and Drew Waters, who've been kind of going crazy, and I expect you'll hear a lot about them this coming week or two. But that's something that comes out every Thursday. You can follow me on Twitter at Leprechaun with a K. In terms of stuff that's coming out, we have some scouting information that's coming in about, and some interviews from draftees, as well as during the All-Star break, what you're going to be wanting to look for, since there's not going to be a lot of, you know, MLB games other than those All-Star festivities. You are going to see the Braves, the midseason top 30 Braves prospect lists come out then. And we're kind of in the initial stages of kind of getting that list set up, and then we'll have those write-ups coming out. I think it's going to be 6 guys a day and for 5 days, and you'll find out kind of where the guys stand in our minds anyway.
And yeah, please stay tuned for that. I am a listener to your podcast, as well as a avid reader of the content on the site. It's like I'm just a regular fan when it comes to that stuff, because I'm not a prospect guy, but I'll leave that stuff to Eric. And we'll cover on this podcast when warranted, as we did earlier today on the show. Eric, thank you again, my friend, for doing this, and we'll do it again very soon.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
As for everybody else, please subscribe. Please subscribe. Please subscribe to this podcast. Rate, review, all that fun stuff. And we'll see everybody in exactly 1 week.